Hi, I'm Josh McDowell. Welcome to the audio version of my book, The Da Vinci Code, A Quest for Answers. In this episode, we'll explore the alleged clues left behind by the Renaissance master, Leonardo, that, according to Dan Brown, point to one of history's best-kept secrets, the marriage of Jesus to Mary Magdalene. Now, being that this is all on audio, we're at a bit of disadvantage. We'll do our best to describe the supposed clues in the paintings in question, but it will be up to you to seek out the images of those paintings mentioned here. It's not hard to do, and you know it will give you a better perspective on what we're talking about. Now, let's return to the Daily Grind Coffee Shop and join Andrea, Matt, and Chris on their quest for answers.
It's a matter of historical record, Teabing said. And Da Vinci was certainly aware of that fact. The Last Supper practically shouts at the viewer that Jesus and Mary Magdalene were a pair. The Da Vinci Code, page 244.
Oh, hey, Matt, there you are. Where's Andrea?
I don't know. She never called last night, so I kind of figured she was either out with friends or up late studying.
So, how'd your research go?
All right, I guess. I didn't get as far as I wanted to. I think I just scratched the surface. I haven't even had time to organize my research very well.
Tell me what you found.
I have to keep reminding myself it's just a novel, but still, it's frustrating to try to sort through what's accurate and what's not.
For example?
Okay, the book says that all descriptions of artwork, architecture, documents, and secret rituals in this novel are accurate, right?
Right.
So, one of the first things I did was check out the Louvre Museum through its official website.
Great idea.
But right there, as I was just getting started, I found an inaccuracy in the Da Vinci Code. The book says that at President Mitterrand's explicit demand, the famous glass pyramid had been constructed of exactly 666 panes of glass.
Yeah, so?
The number is 673.
No kidding.
Now, on the one hand, I can understand playing with the facts there because he goes on to say the 666 number had become a hot topic among conspiracy buffs who claimed 666 was the number of Satan.
Yeah. Well, it's just a novel.
Except, it still bugs me because he said all descriptions of architecture in the book are accurate.
Oh, hey, guys. Sorry I'm late.
Where have you been?
You're not going to believe this. I didn't sleep last night.
Why? What's wrong?
Oh, nothing's wrong. I stayed up all night doing this.
I'll go order your tea. Chai tea, please.
The glass pyramid had been constructed of exactly 666 panes of glass, but it was actually 673. Hey, Matt, I was just telling her what you'd been saying about the panes of glass in the pyramid.
Yeah, I'd actually just gotten started. Mostly the descriptions of artwork in the book seem pretty accurate, but not totally. There seemed to be a little more substance to Langdon's contention in the book that the Mona Lisa was painted by Leonardo as a self-portrait. There is some uncertainty among scholars about who the image depicts. Some recent researchers have used morphing techniques to try to show that the portrait bears a striking resemblance to Leonardo. But then, all contemporary documents refer to the sitter for the portrait as a woman, and contrary to popular opinion, there are no definitive portraits of Leonardo. Most art experts believe the real-life Mona Lisa was Lisa Gherardini, or, less probably, Isabella of Aragon. But then Langdon goes on to say that the title Mona Lisa refers to the Egyptian gods Amon and Isis.
Oh, I know. I thought that part was fascinating.
Except Leonardo never came up with the name Mona Lisa. It was never even used in his lifetime.
How is that possible? He painted it, didn't he?
Yes, but the name Mona Lisa wasn't used until the 19th century. Mona is short for Madonna, meaning simply lady, and Lisa is just the name of the most likely subject of the painting. In Italian and among scholars, it's more commonly known as La Gioconda, which refers to Lisa Gherardini's married name. So that whole thing about Amon Lisa is a total fraud because Leonardo never called it Mona Lisa. The depiction of Leonardo's Madonna of the Rocks... Oh, and by the way, here's something I never knew. Apparently, art scholars do not call him Da Vinci the way the book's characters do because that's just a reference to where he was born. From everything I've read, Leonardo is always Leonardo among artsy people. But I couldn't find any evidence at all for the claim that Leonardo horrified church officials by filling the painting with explosive and disturbing details. And the book describes the angel Uriel as making a cutting gesture as if slicing the invisible head gripped by Mary's claw-like hand. Is that what you see?
It just looks like he's pointing.
Exactly. But the worst part is this. Remember the scene where Sophie basically backs down the museum guard by threatening to rip the Madonna of the rocks?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Here's what I found. Bruce Boucher, the curator of European decorative arts and sculpture at the Art Institute of Chicago, wrote in the New York Times, "It is also breathtaking to read that the heroine Sophie Nauvoo uses one of Leonardo's paintings, the Madonna of the Rocks, as a shield, pressing it so close to her body that it bends. More than 6 feet tall and painted on wood, not canvas, the Madonna is unlikely to be so supple. Yet the book clearly claims it was a 5 foot tall canvas. It's not canvas, and my research shows that it's actually 6.5 feet tall. So much for all descriptions of artwork being accurate."
That's really good research on your part, though, Matt. But it's still disappointing.
Why? It's fiction, right?
Yeah, more and more.
But what about The Last Supper? That's the one I really want to know about.
I did get some information, but there's still a lot I want to check into. Okay, check this out. We all know that Teabing makes a big deal out of showing that Mary Magdalene is depicted sitting next to Jesus in Leonardo's famous painting, right? First, he makes the point that there is not one cup in the painting, but actually 13 cups, which is supposed to be our first hint that the Holy Grail is not a cup, but a person. The book says, "Teabing was grinning smugly. Sophie looked down at the painting, seeing to her astonishment that everyone at the table had a glass of wine, including Christ. 13 cups. Moreover, the cups were tiny, stemless, and made of glass. There was no chalice in the painting, no Holy Grail."
Can I say something?
Sure.
Now, I didn't catch this the first time I read the book because all this talk about the Last Supper was fascinating, but this time, it dawned on me. Teabing treats the Last Supper as if it were a photo of the actual event, as though Leonardo had been there and knew every detail of the historical event himself, instead of what it is, an artistic interpretation painted more than 1,000 years later. And listen to what Teabing says next. This really gets me. It says, "Teabing's eyes twinkled." It's a bit strange, don't you think, considering that both the Bible and our standard Grail legend celebrate this moment as the definitive arrival of the Holy Grail? Oddly, Da Vinci appears to have forgotten to paint the cup of Christ. That's just absurd. The Bible says no such thing. In fact, the gospel accounts refer only to Jesus using a cup. No Bible scholar or informed historian would be surprised at all that there is no fancy, jewel-encrusted chalice in Leonardo's painting. That's the stuff of legend, not history.
I didn't know that. But what about the person next to Jesus, who Teabing says is Mary Magdalene?
Andrea, do you see the hint of a bosom?
I think this guy on Jesus' left has more of a bosom than that one.
I see what you mean.
Teabing also makes his case based on Jesus and the figure to his right being clothed as mirror images of one another, forming an indisputable V-shape representing the female womb. By the way, they were sitting, and the unquestionable outline of an enormous, flawlessly formed letter M, formed by the shapes of Jesus and the person at his right, perhaps representing matrimonial or Mary Magdalene.
Do you see that?
I see a V, but I can't see how anyone would think this represents an M.
So, let me tell you what I've discovered. About halfway through my research, it dawned on me that even if Leonardo was trying to tell us that Mary Magdalene was the Holy Grail, his belief doesn't mean it's true. I mean, Leonardo lived almost 15 centuries after Jesus, right? He wasn't exactly a first-hand observer, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that makes sense. But do you think it's Mary instead of John, I mean?
I found a Slate magazine article that I thought put it well. It said, "Look closely at the figure to Jesus' right," Brown says. "It's obviously a woman. What any art historian could tell him is that the figure, always thought to be St. John the Apostle, resembles other Leonardo portraits of biblical figures as effeminate men. If Da Vinci thought John looked like a girly man, that's one thing, but a girlish-looking figure in a painting isn't proof that Mary was present at the Last Supper, let alone that Jesus and Mary were married. And by the way, if Mary was sitting in John's seat at the Last Supper, where was John? And everything I've researched so far says that in Leonardo's day, John was also shown as young and beardless. Bruce Boucher, the scholar I quoted earlier, said this is the way Florentine artists traditionally depicted John. Even more specifically, portrayals of the Last Supper by other artists of the period also show a beardless John sitting right next to Jesus.
Oh, that makes sense. Since the Bible account of the Last Supper depicts John sitting close enough to Jesus to lay his head on Jesus' chest.
Okay, but what about the clothes? I mean, all that stuff about the letter V and the letter M seem kind of lame to me, but he does have a point about their clothes being like mirror images of each other.
I haven't gotten that far in my research.
I wouldn't be surprised to find out that that has more to do with art than theology. After all, As a master artist, Leonardo may have chosen colors and shades and shapes for their compositional value, don't you think?
Of course.
Look at this, too. See this guy on the right of Jesus and this one here on his left? One is wearing green with an orangish wrap, and the other is wearing just the opposite.
What about Peter's supposedly menacing look and the dagger in his hand, implying that Peter was jealous of Mary? Did you find anything about that?
A little bit. For starters, I think it just looks like he's leaning in to talk to the figure next to Jesus, which matches up with the scholarship. I haven't yet found a single scholarly source that doesn't agree with the conventional opinion that Leonardo painted this scene to depict the disciples' reactions after Jesus said that one of them would betray him.
If that's the case, then Leonardo knew his New Testament, because one of the Gospels says after Jesus made that startling announcement, Peter told John to ask Jesus who he meant. And at least one scholar says the hand holding a dagger could have been partly to identify Peter, foreshadowing the weapon he drew in the Garden of Gethsemane. There's actually a study sketch Leonardo made for Peter's right arm that supports that explanation.
Yeah, so that's pretty much what I found out.
And you said you hadn't gotten very far.
While it's true that art is subjective, and any one piece can have as many interpretations as it has viewers, Sir Teabing's interpretation of the Mona Lisa, the Last Supper, and the Madonna of the Rocks appear to be based probably more in wishful thinking than on thoughtful observation. If you could couple that with the fact that the histories and depictions of the artwork in the Da Vinci Code are rarely accurate, you quickly realize that there is absolutely no substance to these claims. In our next episode, we'll go beyond the so-called clues to investigate the mystery to which they are said to point. Was Jesus married to Mary Magdalene? Please join us. This is Josh McDowell, and thanks for listening.
The Da Vinci Code, A Quest for Answers, is produced by Campus Crusade for Christ.